We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode. The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Definitely. So I know, as I was doing research, that you eventually purchased the company from your mother and, you know, became the leader of the company. What was that transition like? Because, of course, you know, you spent a good number of years working with her and working at the company. What was it like to be the person in charge now?
So after commuting to Nashville from New York for a couple of years, I decided I needed to go back to New York.
Yeah.
And I opened up my own company called the McKissick Group. And that's where, you know, I began to really build and understand, you know, how to build a company in a big, complicated city like New York. And then over time, probably I would say almost 10 years, my mother, her blood pressure is getting high. Mm. She's having, you know, physical issues. You know, people, the way they do business is not the way she's used to doing business. She trusts people. So I just came home. So I did to her what she did to me. I said, I said, guess what? Today is your last day at work. You are retiring.
Yeah.
Period. She's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, oh, yes, you are. We're going to move that desk right from under you. And she said when she was walking to the car that day, she was doing leprechaun kicks because she was so relieved because the pressure had gotten so great.
Yeah.
So I came in different from my mother. I already had a business. I am an engineer. I understood architecture and construction. So I could come in and interview her staff and figure out who's doing what.
Yeah.
And who needs to stay, who needs to go. But then after I decided to keep her three offices open, the amount of work that you would get in the southern states, like her office were in Memphis, Nashville, and Montgomery, you know, maybe they were building schools for $4 or $5 million, mm-hmm. you know, $10 million. We build schools for $300 million in New York. Okay, so it was just a no comparison, but it's the same amount of work.
Right.
So I decided it's best to close those offices so I could spend all my time building in New York.
Right.
Which is a good thing for me because I really needed to focus. I mean, New York is fast paced. right now while I'm in LA, I don't know what's going on. But it's moving. Right. Transactions are happening.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not there. And so that's what I did. I sold everything. I mean, I closed everything. And then mom really just did consulting work for me, which was, you know, been great. And she still helps.
Wow.
She still helps.
That's
She's
awesome.
A great help. You know, it's like, mom, I need to see the mayor of Nashville. No problem. She can make it happen. So, however, you know, taking on the responsibility of McKissick and McKissick is a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as when I think about it, what keeps me going is I don't ever want it to go under during my watch.
Yeah.
I'm fifth generation, right? You know, businesses, I think it's one out of five businesses failed in the first year. So to be able to pass a company down to the second generation out after the failed businesses, I think that's about, you know, 60%. And then to pass to a third generation is 20%. Mm-hmm. And passing to a fourth generation is 2%.
Wow.
And we're fifth generation and we're Black in America. So when, you know, I start thinking about the gravity of that, like, oh my God, like this is something that, you know, first of all, we should all be proud of.
Yeah.
Because with all the problems our country has, we were still able to do this. Others have been able to do this. There's this ability to create your own destiny. And so with that in mind and thinking this is not going to happen under my, I'm not going to have things go haywire under my watch. That's when I start thinking the real thing I need to do is to get the sixth generation a part of this business. Because then that's really an anomaly. That is a unicorn. Like, where is the sixth generation business? And it's interesting now. It's all women.
Right.
And, you know, it's I have two girls.
Yeah.
So what, you know, used to be run by men is now all run by women.
Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's what keeps me going. That keeps me inspired.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What were some challenges you faced in those early days? And what are some that you face now as a Black woman in this space?
Well, in New York City, if you look at city contracts, less than 1.2 go to women of color. So, you know, the challenge is that when you have an MWBE status, sometimes you're stigmatized that your staff isn't as good. A lot of times they try to say minority firms are more expensive. I have never understood that one. It's the thoughts that people have project on your business and, you know, the assumptions they have about your business, you know, that you don't have bonding, you don't have capital. I'm like, well, you don't look at my bank account.
Right.
You don't know what I have. Right. And, you know, I've actually seen some of the large companies' corporate accounts because they have idiots who mail it out by mistake. Okay.
Wow.
I've seen. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
One of the larger companies in New York, there was an RFP out. The client asked everyone to mail in their financial statement. This guy mailed it to everybody instead of just the client. And so I'm like, well, golly, you all are smoke and mirrors, right? Like, so don't come count what I have.
Right, right.
And say what I can or can't do. Only I can do that. You know, there's always the fight of percentages. So when I first started with the MWBE program, when they first started in New York 30 years ago, the percentages were probably 10% MWBEs on all city and state contracts. Now it's up to 30, 35.
Wow.
But it really ought to be 50.
Yeah.
When you look at the capacity of MWBE firms. And so we are constantly fighting that fight. The majority of our program dollars go to white women-owned businesses. and so that's another issue.
Right.
I just recently found out in Nashville that McKissick, me, I can't be counted as a woman-owned business. I can only be counted as a minority business.
Well, why is that?
That's the craziest statute I've ever heard of. And that's their regs. So that's what I'm saying. It's not it's not uniform. A lot of people don't know the difference between a minority-owned business, an MBE, a disadvantaged business, a DBE, a service-disabled veteran business. People don't know all these terminologies, and they want to clunk it all together. But it's all started around people of color.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not getting the majority of the work under those programs. So that's a challenge. I have challenges with people who come in and assume, oh, you don't really build, do you? I had a developer come to me and he wanted a joint venture. Mm-hmm. And this has happened several times. He wanted a joint venture because I knew the client, not him. This would be a new client for him. So he wanted to use our name. Then he said, but we're going to do all the work. And I'm like, well, I don't understand how that works. You know, and then basically, because I've seen it before, I just told him, listen, this isn't a good fit, and walked away from that. But that still happens.
Yeah.
Still happens. We had the casinos come into New York City. I got with my political consultants and attorneys, and I drew up, you know, what an engagement with McKissick would look like with the developers. And we asked for a small percentage, and 40% of the construction, stuff like that.
Yeah.
They, you know, they have you in, they wanna, you know, impress you because they know they need you on the team. But then when you give them that piece of paper, they're like, I think we're going in another direction.
Right.
So they don't even want to negotiate about it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.